Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Training camp is just 2 weeks away. We are getting so close to NBA preseason, and the Cleveland Cavaliers have been making moves to round out their roster. Joining me today to discuss that, as well as some interesting reports from Shams about potential rule changes, is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
Can't believe camp's almost here. You do forget how short these off-seasons have been. As compared to normal. And I mean, imagine for people who are, you know, remember this team is in the finals every year. Could you imagine how short it would be if you were a Suns fan or a Bucks fan right now? Pretty wild, pretty exciting. I feel like the Cavs roster is becoming what it's going to be heading into the year. And I'm feeling pretty good about it for the most part. I'm excited to talk about kind of these fringe moves they're making and kind of where we think this team's going to go.
Yeah, I'm excited about it as well. I've been trying to make a habit of holding back on some of my unnecessary fact checks with you because I feel like it kills momentum and it's just unnecessary. But you did say that off seasons have been short when we went through a 9-month one last year.
Well, that one doesn't count.
I'm okay with the shortened off season.
Listen, I'm saying is that's not even a fact check. That's actually BS out of you because. The break from bubble finals to the season starting last year was super short, and then this one is short. That is two short off seasons in a row, thus proving me factually correct.
You know, if the Cavs are as defensive as you next season, they're going to have a real good shot at the play.
You are unbelievable.
I am excited. You know, I'm just in a great mood because the Cavs did something to help pander to me, and that's bring in another Canadian. We are now up to two with Fiondu Camigeli and now Kevin Pangos. Pangos signing a 2-year deal with the Cleveland Cavaliers. They dug into some of their mid-level exception to do it, so that is probably a good indicator that, hey, we have some cautious optimism about what he might bring to the table here. Last season, Pangos was first team all EuroLeague, fourth in assists per game. And I tweeted this out, but I wanted to share my thought process because when this came down, my first thought was, great, Damian Dotson is not going to have to play for the Cavs because I couldn't really envision many scenarios where he would be playing with Garland, Sexton, and Rubio kind of eating the bulk of those guard minutes, and even guys like Dylan Windler probably being prioritized, or Jetty Osman in the depth chart. The only real situation where we really saw him get consistent minutes last year was when that point guard position was decimated.
Or when the three was decimated.
Right. So bringing in Pangos as a third guard, which I think... I wouldn't expect him to be part of the regular rotation just given how much they have invested in Garland, Sexton, and Rubio. But having him as a depth option really made what Dotson brings to the table a little redundant because I don't want to go too overboard with my love for the Canadian Pangos, but at the same time, I'm pretty confident in saying I think he's probably a better basketball player than Damian Dotson.
I would agree, especially for what this team needs. And, like, yeah. You know, what I kind of wanted to talk about, and maybe this is a wider topic for later, but, like, my biggest concern with the Nance deal was that the team got less IQ-y. Like, that's something the team has been short on, so it felt bad to move out someone else that was one of the better, you know, had better basketball feel on the team. Yeah. And, you know... going in with either Rubio or Pangos being the kind of players that can just, like, get the team into an offense and play high IQ smart basketball, it just feels like one of those things that it when you're short on something on a roster or you just have a particularly young roster, those kind of things take on an outsized influence that they wouldn't have otherwise, that you might not notice Pangos on a smarter team because it's like, okay, well, they already have enough of that. The Cavs need pro adults as much as possible if they're trying to be competitive this year, given what their projected starting lineup is looking like. So I think it's a fun signing. I won't pretend to be a Kevin Pangos expert, but his per 36s in the EuroLeague are really encouraging for like what you want from a team for a team like this. 17 and 8 on, you know, on elite 3-point shooting and pretty solid volume. 7.3 attempts from 3 per 36 last year. You know, he does seem to kind of scratch that itch. Now they all of a sudden are they're very point guard heavy in terms of players that you kind of expect and want to get minutes. I don't know if Pangos is going to be in the rotation off the rip. My guess is no.
Mine as well.
But just because of, you know, the glut of guards that are going to be taking minutes at the one, because, you know, it's not like Sexton won't get any minutes at the one.
Right. Well, I mean, it's very possible that he doesn't. Like, it's between Garland and Rubio. I think you'd want Sexton playing with one of those guys at all times, because we talked about it last season, but he was at his most effective when he can play off ball, both as a playmaker and as a scorer. So I think ideally you want him to be there. But the reality of the situation is, over an 82-game season, guys are going to miss time. You are going to see them probably experiment in those opportunities, maybe in games where the result is kind of out of hand or they have a big lead. You might see Kevin Pangos go out there.
And frankly, you know, when we're going to see him is when people are hurt. Because you know, these are guys who get banged up with the old knick-knack injuries now and then, and that's where I kind of see it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And it was fun to get so much positive reinforcement with the Pango signing, because I had friends that were Raptors fans reaching out to me, Blake Murphy from The Athletic. Everyone was really excited because Kevin Pangos is one of those guys from his time in Gonzaga to what he's accomplished in the EuroLeague. He's somebody that has really got people to rally behind him. He's been a strong locker room presence wherever he's been, which you don't know how that's going to translate, because a guy being a strong locker room presence in Europe doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to translate to the NBA, or that these young players are going to respect him as a veteran when he's really having his NBA rookie season. But at the same time, you kind of would anticipate that once you're going in practice and whatnot, when you have a guy that's a very intelligent player, someone that points things out to you, you earn respect that way. So adding him to the locker room to kind of fulfill those needs is nice. And then on the basketball court, he is a very gifted passer. Not a great athlete, not a particularly strong defender.
Yeah, I mean, Davion Mitchell literally said he studied Pangos' game to watch someone get a lot out of a limited basketball frame.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So he's someone that's going to take care of the ball, that makes really, really great passes, and is just a steadying presence on the roster. Now, my hope for this season is that Ricky Rubio is here for the entirety of the year. I did see some people mention that, hey, well, now that Pangos is here and maybe he proves himself, he might be the backup should Rubio be dealt at the deadline, which I guess it's smart to not rule that out as a possibility. If Pangos plays well enough where you feel comfortable in him being a backup, maybe Rubio is someone that you could attach with an asset to buy at the deadline and maybe bring in a wing or whatever the case may be. But really, we talked about this a lot, and this is one of those areas where I'm pretty close-minded. I want adults in the locker room, and Ricky Rubio throughout his career has been someone that's been credited for being a great leader. So having those three with Garland, Rubio, and Pangos together for the entirety of this season would be something that would make me happy. I'm feeling pretty good about this point guard rotation.
I was about to ask you, is this the position group you feel the best about?
Oh, that is you know what? I think it is. I think it is, because even worse, like, quote unquote, worst case, you do have Colin Sexton, who showed improvement as a passer last season. You have Isaac Okoro that can maybe play some point. Now we're talking about fourth and fifth string at the position. I feel really good, because that was one of the weakest spots of this roster last season. And it's
by the way, given that your power forward group is Evan Mobley, Lauri Markkanen, and Kevin Love.
And Dean Wade and Lamar Wade. Stevens. I feel pretty good about those guys too. And I guess in theory, power forward Jetty Osman. But I feel like this is going to be
never
the year.
Again.
I feel like this is the year that that's being retired. I don't
he
think
he finally
we're
gets
Jetty
to
Osman
not play. Have to play power forward if things go the way we wanted them to.
And if he does, things have gone in
so bad. Things have gone so bad.
In a comically bad direction. So I think we can lay that one to rest. But yeah, I feel really good about this point guard rotation. And like, it's such an important position in today's NBA that I think that that's something that's really going to raise the floor for this team. I think it's going to give them a more steady baseline when you have two veterans and a player who I think our listeners know I'm insanely high on in Darius Garland.
Yeah, I think the Garland part cannot be understated when you're talking about this position group and like why we're excited about it. But really what I'm excited about more than anything is like the chance of consistently organized play. Like, I mean, it's not a high bar to hit, but the Cavs haven't really hit it the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So having a high IQ player that literally brings the ball up on a play-to-play basis has not been a luxury that this team could count on, and I think this year they're finally there. Now, there are, because of the way they've invested, there are holes elsewhere, there's insecurity elsewhere, but at least that position, I feel pretty good that they can absorb a hit or two and still be competent at the point guard position, which was not the case last year. It was absolutely Darius or Tire Fire.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you had a very brief period with Dante Exum playing well, and then he got hurt. Dele had the concussion issues and neck issues that kept him out forever. And then once he came back to the lineup, it was not effective at all. I expect Pangos to very comfortably be a better player than Dele was last season. And I mean,
if he's not, then the Cavs have made a mistake. I mean, I think Dele was not a replacement player last year, and that's no fault of his own. He had terrible health problems.
Yeah.
And he's near the end of his career. I mean, he acknowledged, I mean, there's a reason he went and signed in Australia. You know, he was ready to kind of move on to the next stage of his career. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's hard to be a guard in the NBA when you don't. I mean, he was never a great athlete at the position. And when you know, it's funny when I always say this, but when people talk about players who are limited athletically, they always feel like they're going to age gracefully. It's like, oh, they're not counting on it. It's like, no, they're surviving through sheer force of will. And for them to lose another 10% made it damn near impossible. And I think that's really what late stage Dele was. He had lost another 5% off that athleticism that he didn't have a lot of margin for error on. So, you know, I do think Pango should be a better player than Dele. And Dele was supposed to be this team's third point guard last year. And you've talked about that. You know, his ability to organize, I do think that both backup point guards are even better at organizing offense than Dante Exum ever was. It's not really, Dante isn't really a pure point guard. He was just kind of
he was a combo guard that happened to play well with Sexton, and that pairing was really effective. And that's another reason why I'm really high on this team. I mean, it's funny. We've talked about the way that this offseason's kind of shaken out and our expectations for next year. But one guy we don't talk about very often is Colin Sexton. And it's funny because that's a guy that's consistently got better every season of his career. So you can expect, whether it's even just improvement in the margins, but I think the situation he's going to be in, playing alongside Rubio or Pangos, having Lauri Markkanen likely out there, probably Evan Mobley, and then one of the wings, whether it be Denzel Valentine, Jetty Osmond, Dylan Windler, Lamar Stevens, having one of those guys out there, like that second like bench lineup is so much better and is such a better position for Sexton that I think he's really going to play well. But we should go from a high IQ player in Kevin Pangos to someone that's been criticized for his decision making and a new member of the Cleveland Cavaliers, Denzel Valentine. Now, Carter, I want you to start here as a former Chicago resident, as somebody who tweeted out your list of kind of replacement wings that you'd like brought in and included Denzel Valentine on that list. What are your thoughts on this?
I am catching a lot of hell for that list. I was, I know how Denzel Valentine's career has gone to this point, and I know it hasn't been great. I know that Bulls fans weren't super sad to see him go, and that certainly was my experience with all my friends from there. To be clear, let me first contextualize that list. I was looking for people who I thought would be available for the minimum and to fill out the back end of a rotation, not necessarily someone who I thought was going to get to start. I think that it's fine. I really think it's fine. I think what you wanted from this signing at this stage was someone who's going to compete with Jetty and Dylan for backup 3 minutes. Because the backup two you can insulate pretty well with extra Rubio minutes. and putting all of Sexton's minutes there, as you just mentioned, that can get you up to the, you can get to 48 a lot easier. Three is a whole different animal, because if you want Okoro there at, 33, 34 minutes a game, you have 14 minutes of not much you can count on. Jetty's coming off a career worst year. Dylan has played healthy basketball for like 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And what you needed was somebody who could conceivably at least make those guys work, or at least give JB Bickerstaff another option.
Yep.
He's got pretty okay size, 6'4", 6'5", decent frame, could be a decent defender conceptually, hasn't really been one, could be a good shooter, hasn't really been one, though his sophomore year, he shot 38% from three, or 39%.
You know what, he's another guy that had a strong 17-18 season with Chicago, and then the Jim Boylan era hit. And it
yeah, I mean, how much stink did the Jim Boylan era put on these poor prospects, man? It did not go well. So I think what you're if you're a Cavs fan and you're saying, what's my upside? It's probably that year two of the Jim Boylan era, which is just under 40% 3-point shooting on okay volume, five boards and three assists in 25, 26 minutes a game. I think what you're hoping for is the same thing you're hoping for in the Laurie acquisition in miniature, which is that you're betting that the Bulls environment was so weird those couple years that it really threw some of those guys into some weird funks and stunted their development, and that you're going to reclaim it.
I mean, one of those things is the fact that they never played with a point guard. Like, they never really had a point guard on the roster. The closest thing is probably Satoransky, which, that's not a great circumstance to be in. Yeah, Valentine, it's an interesting case because he's not someone that I'm high on, that I have a lot of confidence in, but I feel better with him being on the roster just because it's another guy to compete for those minutes. And let's say we assume Okoro plays 7 to 10 minutes at the two. 24 minutes is kind of what I've had in mind as the backup small forward, or whether that's done by committee, or if there's a player that maybe steps up, or you trade for someone that occupies that role. So having Valentine come into the situation, I think you hope that the new environment gives him a little more motivation. He probably was someone that expected to get a little more than a non-guaranteed deal with the Cavs. That didn't come to fruition. And in general, like, throughout my time watching sports, and like, usually those circumstances have two outcomes. Either the player responds positively to that and starts making better decisions, dedicates themselves to the game in different ways, or you have something like what happened with Jetty last year, which I think at least in some ways was a result of him no longer being in that role he was comfortable with as being the starter and taking questionable shots and pressing a little more than he needed to. He had some really good games last year, but a lot of the time that was, hey, the guards are out, so we're going to have the ball in your hands and you're playing point, or we need you to start this game, and he would play well in those circumstances. And what the Cavs really need is a role player that's going to step up and play well within that role. So having Valentine, Jetty, Windler, and Lamar Stevens as the four guys really competing for those minutes, that those 24 minutes at the backup three position, I feel better having more names in there. Like, it's more options, right?
Yeah, and it's options for these guys to ebb and flow over the year. You know, like, I don't think that I think it's very unlikely that Dylan Windler, Jetty Osman, or Denzel Valentine are all good for a whole year.
No, I don't have a high degree of confidence that anyone is going to seize that role where they are a consistent 22, 24 minute per game player. I think on a night-to-night basis, you might have a feeling out process based on how guys performed in practice, who's going to be that first wing off the bench that gets a shot to shine. And you know what? That's not a bad circumstance to be in.
One thing that I think about with Valentine, if we're trying to figure out an argument for why he'll be solid for the Cavs, is I do think there is something to be said for, like, I mean, if you look at his low lights, it's a lot of pressing. It's a lot of, like, ridiculous pull-up threes late in games and kind of trying to be a hero.
No look passes to nobody.
Yeah, trying to be a hero. And I just wonder if, and like, I know everyone's probably rolling their eyes here, but I just wonder if there's some value in going away from the team that took you in the lottery that shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we all can agree he was not a successful investment at the 14th overall pick.
No.
As a four-year player at Michigan State. So maybe, you know, like, I almost wonder if he just gets to the Cavs and JB says, you're going to take spot-up threes from the corners and some on the wings, and you are going to defend your ass off, and you're going to move the ball.
Yeah.
You know, like, what does that look like for him? Is that a more reasonable road to success? Maybe it's not, but, you know, like, the playmaking has never been horrific.
Mm-hmm.
Never been great, but it's never been terrible.
Yeah,
you know.
This isn't a guy that is lacking NBA skills. He has them. It's the way that he chooses to use them, right? Like,
he might not have as many NBA skills as you might hope, but he's got a lot of conceptual skills that haven't turned into proper skills.
That's fair, right? I just mean I think he's a capable shooter. Like, for his career, 36% from three, decent enough volume. First two seasons were obviously a lot better, and then the last 2 years he shot about 33%, 33.5%. Man, you're playing my role as the optimist. Like, I don't even know if I would trust Valentine over Dylan Windler.
No, I wouldn't. I think he's third.
Yeah.
I would say that if I am power ranking my backup wing prospects, I think it goes, oh man, that sucks. I don't want to play this game anymore.
You're in it now.
I'm in it. If I had to pick, I would probably go, if healthy, Dylan, mm-hmm. just because the upside seems to be there still. And the conceptual role stuff is there, then Jetty, then Denzel, pretty far third. But, like, neither Dylan or Jetty have shown enough to conceivably justify you really putting them on a pedestal in camp.
Yeah, I mean, Jetty and Valentine, there's a lot of same-same but different but still same going on with
that's
them.
That's a good take, actually.
Like, there's
and again,
a lot
like,
of the
let
same
me be clear.
Issues
I'm
when
not...
it comes to decision making, shot selection, that sort of thing. So having both of those guys, like, I do think there's a value in that role not being just handed over. Because in a lot of ways, like when we went into last season, it's,
Jetty
okay,
has been
well,
grandfathered into a role for 4 years in a row.
Exactly, and we were wondering if that would be the case to start last season, if whether or not Okoro would unseat him. Right, we kind of figured you'd give that to the incumbent unless Okoro does enough that kind of warrants that selection, and his defense was consistent enough that he ended up starting, and it kind of threw Jetty off of his game. But now that there's more faces in camp competing for that position, even I'll bring him up again, Lamar Stevens, who has established at least a baseline of what he brings to the table. And I still
with
think
better
it was
spacing one, bigs than he had last year.
Right.
Keep banging
and
that
I think,
drum.
I think that's one of your better points is bringing in Lauri Markkanen made me feel better about the backup small forward position, because now I do think you can. Like, I think you can get away with Ricky Rubio, Sexton, Stevens, Lauri Markkanen, and Evan Mobley as your second unit.
Yeah, especially in the minutes where Jarrett isn't out there. So you have either Mobley, who is a theoretical shooter, not a great one, but a solid one.
And some of that creates spacing in other ways.
Yes,
with the way that he draws.
And then
the
either Markkanen or Kevin Love in the short term. So, you know, right. Those are the ideal players for a guy like Lamar Stevens to get in at the three with.
Yeah, and because nothing is just being handed over to these guys, I think you increase the likelihood that one of these guys turns into a contributor. Now, as I mentioned on the front end, it's very possible that that environment causes Valentine or Jetty to just jack up more shots and press because they feel like they need to earn a role, which that's something that JB Bickerstaff's going to have to deal with. He's going to have to communicate, hey, it's not about how many points you have. It's not about whether or not your shots are going in. It's making the right decisions and process over results, because that's what a lot of this is going to be next year, because we are still counting on a lot of young players that are going to make mistakes. It needs to be a process over results mentality, because if they stick with the right process, the results are going to become a little more and more consistent, and hopefully they're able to catch teams off guard by just doing the right things and not beating themselves. Because I do feel like this is a team and a group that has beat themselves on multiple occasions while also playing with a talent deficit.
Yep. And with that said, with all that optimism out of the way, Cavs are probably going to lose games because of this backup three group. You know, like, I think that if there will be a game or two where those 14 minutes that Isaac sits, or if Isaac's having a bad game and you have nowhere else to go, that we'll look back and go, yep, that's what happened.
Yeah. It's not a grouping that increases the margin for error for the other positions.
No, as much as I feel like that's what Kevin Pangos does for the guard group, I don't think Denzel really does that in a meaningful way right now, unless he's got something in the tank that he hasn't shown yet. But I just think there's a world in which this works out and everyone's happy. I just think that the chances of that happening isn't super high right now. And I think the Cavs know that. I mean, just based on, you know, them being active in the trade market, reportedly at least, you know, for an extra wing. I think they know they're short a wing. And it's just a matter of, can they survive with their group? I think they can, but there will be nights where they don't.
Yeah. And Chris Fedor did mention in his reporting after the signing of Valentine that the Cavs are still likely, in his opinion, to sign at least one more player going into camp. They have both two-way spots available at this point. I don't believe anyone.
Yeah, you forget that Lamar got converted, or at least right. I do sometimes.
Right. So Broderick Thomas is going to be keeping control of these spots.
And Kevin Gailey is non-guaranteed?
That's correct.
Thank you.
So neither of those are on two-way positions. So still likely going to bring in one more person. Would you rather see another wing be brought in, someone that can compete for it, or the sneaky thin position, which is center? Yes, we have a lot of seven-footers on the team, but it's Jared Allen and Kevin Gailey in terms of guys that are actually centers.
If I were Kobe Altman, I would be calling Isaiah Hartenstein's agent and offering
one. He signed a camp deal with the Clippers.
Yeah. No, he can't. He can't. If he doesn't make it through camp, I'd look into bringing him back. I think that his market was probably lower than people thought. Certainly than I thought, because I thought he was good.
Probably lower than he thought, giving up the qualifying offer and taking a camp deal.
So if he does not make it, well, yeah, I mean,
I think he's going to make it. They really,
the Cavs didn't extend one.
Oh yeah. Oh,
they did not. I'm 99% sure. So
you know what? It's been a long offseason.
It's been a long. Don't hold this against us, guys. Point is, I would rather ride with Hartenstein or someone of his ilk than Kevin Gailey. I just don't know if Kevin Gailey's shown enough to be a backup center that I can trust. I don't think the Cavs currently plan to play him, but we all know how fluid the Kevin Love situation is reportedly. And I think that I would want a little more security at that spot than what they currently have. But with that said, with a two-way spot, oh, baby, I think you can go chase. Is Trayvon Blewett too old now? He might be.
I'm not too sure.
I think they can look to some of their camp guys who played well for them, or some of their summer league guys who played well for them. Matt Ryan action. Because, you know, the two-way market is actually kind of limited. There isn't as many bodies out there as you think, because you can't just take anyone. They have to have a certain level of NBA experience, a certain age, all that fun stuff. I'd look into those guys. But really, I'm thinking about those non-guaranteed deals they have on the team. They already cut one in Dodson. And really look to see if there aren't, you know, as the smoke clears from camp and teams with maybe a little bit more depth of talent start making cuts, you know, like a guy like Hartenstein was a good rotation player for the Cavs last year.
Yeah, and for that reason, I think he's going to stick with the Clippers because they really need a backup center, and I think they'll be surprised
at how good he is. But if he doesn't for whatever reason, sure, let's look into bringing him back. But really, the goal should continue to be to, at least with the two-way spots, in my opinion, is look to keep filling out that wing rotation. You can find bigs, but if you find a shooter that can stick, oh man, you are playing with found money.
No, we are on the same page there. I wouldn't mind bringing in another center. How the Kevin Love situation plays out is a big factor in that, because I'm perfectly fine with Jared Allen and Mobley kind of occupying most of the minutes at center, but you also have to prepare for the reality of maybe one of those guys misses time. Like maybe Jared Allen misses some time.
And it's not like a, it's not always a terrible injury. Sometimes guys just miss games here and there.
Yeah, exactly. So more depth there would be welcomed, or, you know, take another swing at a shooter. I'm pretty happy with the way this roster is shaping up, but you just got to sure that you increase your margin for error as much as possible.
Can I ask you if this is the roster, this is what we got going into the year, how do you feel?
Pretty good. I'm feeling pretty good. I did the predictions pod with Ty prior to the Laurie trade, and I do feel better about the upside of this team. I really think it's funny because Laurie is a guy that has put up numbers and has done things but hasn't really had the impact. But when I think about what he makes easier for guys like Garland and Sexton and Okoro and Mobley and Allen, and the ways they are going to make his life easier, I really feel like that is, like, that's impact. Like, I think he's really going to make a difference for those guys. And while he hasn't been as impactful of a player as Larry has been to this point in his career, I think that this is a really good situation for him. And I'm feeling better about it as more time has gone on. Because really, when you're thinking about it, like, if we went into camp with Larry as the backup four, you got consistent questions about the spacing at the power forward position with Mobley and Larry. And Laurie, I just think he enables guys that you're more invested in, whether it be Garland, Sexton, Okoro, Mobley, and Allen. Like, I think he just works with all those guys. So I'm feeling pretty damn good about where this team is. And my optimism about them getting a play-in spot continues to grow by the day.
I think I just like it because I think that they're in a spot where, like, sure, I guess it would be nice if they could trade for, like, Terrence Ross with a second-round pick or something like that. But
if that's on the table, please do that.
Please.
Bring in a Jeremy Lamb or Terrence Ross, and then I'm going to be full steam ahead.
Or multiple Cavs are getting the play-in. Sure, it'd be nice if they added a wing and could do it without, you know, giving up tremendous draft capital that makes it not worth it. But with that said, this team is kind of becoming what they're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They have 6-7 guys that are really, you know, you can kind of pencil in for their future at this point.
I've got a pretty good idea what the identity of this roster is as well.
Yeah, so it's either going to work or it's not going to work, you know? And we're going to get to learn, you know, like Jeremy Lamb ain't the difference between this being a good team and a bad team. He might be the difference between, he might be a floor raiser in bench minutes where, you know, you're depending on Jetty right now, who just hasn't been good enough. But like, I feel like they have at least put a roster together that I will be able to evaluate. And that's been such a challenge the last couple of years, where it's, whether it's injury or people who are just kind of transient trade pieces that are just kind of there because they landed there.
Mm-hmm.
This is finally becoming like a thing that I can go, so what's the plan and is it going to work?
Yeah. Yeah.
And to be clear, I'm not saying is it going to work just this year, though. I do think that this team is going to try to win games. It's is this whole thing going to work? Because if they come out and it's just a nightmare year again,
mm-hmm.
well, then maybe they've got some hard decisions next summer. But I think they're at the point where they can finally start taking in some proper information to make those decisions.
Right, and in the areas that it fails, I think that failure is going to be instructive. In the areas that it succeeds, that's going to be instructive. And I like that. That's one of the reasons I really like bringing Laurie, because we now have a better sample size of, okay, what type of bigs work really well with Evan Mobley? How does Darius Garland react to having a guy that's going to run around on the perimeter, get open? Is he going to make those kick-out passes? Is Sexton going to recognize those opportunities? Like, that's all really important things to learn.
Is Sexton going to be able to run a double drag with Laurie and Jarrett or Mobley at the five, you know?
Woo. It's going to be fun, man.
Hasn't run one yet. Hasn't run it well yet. So, like, is that going to be stuff he's going to be able to do? Because the pieces are there now.
How is JB going to use the pieces now that he has pieces, right?
Yeah, like that's the other thing.
So many things.
Everyone likes to dog the Cavs offense for being overly vanilla. Well, you got some horses now. Go use them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if he doesn't use him, then that can inform the way he builds his staff moving forward. You know, like there's so many things that we can learn from this roster. So while I am less bullish than you on their play-in chances, just that early season schedule is just brutal. I do think we're finally going to actually learn. I hate aimless basketball where it's just like, they're just playing out the year with a bunch of people who are not going to be here for a long time, for a very long time. And it is just, yeah, it's just different. You know, it feels different this year.
Yeah.
Whether it goes well or not, it feels different.
Yep. Yep. I completely agree. And this is one of the things we said in last season preview, that by the start of training camp, we needed to have some sort of idea of what type of team they were trying to be. And I feel like we have a much, much better idea of that. The last thing I want to hit on before we wrap this thing up is the report from Shams that the NBA Board of Governors will vote this month to approve the coach's challenge being the lone method to review out-of-bounds calls with under 2 minutes left in the game, meaning out-of-bounds plays will no longer be automatically triggered for reviews by officials. Carter, your thoughts on this potential change?
I still hate the out of bounds review process at large. I think it is within the spirit of the game, fundamentally flawed. Mm-hmm. Until they figure out a way to account for other mistakes made in the adjudication process of the play, I guess it's nice that there's less, but like, you know, my problem has always been, If I'm guarding you at the end of a game, mm-hmm. and I smack the shit out of the back of your hand, fouling you, and the ball goes out of bounds off your hand, and the mm-hmm. refs don't call the foul, and the play gets reviewed, it's my ball. What?
Yeah.
That doesn't work. You know, it is a fundamental thing the NBA has still not been able to answer for me yet in these out of bounds review plays it's going to dog me until it doesn't, you know, like you can get past all the spirit of the rule stuff that, like, you know, where it's like, I clearly knocked the ball out, but it brushed off like a centimeter of your fingertips. Like, while I am like, you know, I kind of preferred it the old way, even if it was inaccurate, I get the letter of the law being enforced there, but there's an actual problem with the fact that I can foul you, the ball goes out of bounds, but they just didn't call the foul at the time, and now I profit. Like, it doesn't align for me. And so I guess anything that leads to less out-of-bounds reviews makes me happier.
I like that you went on a tangent there. you're on the money.
This is what I'm passionate about. This is what I hate.
I have mixed emotions here because automatically my persecution complex kicked in. Having rooted for Cleveland and Winnipeg sports, I automatically think, oh God, well, it's not going to be reviewed. It's just going to go to the big market team and we're going to get screwed in every one of these situations. I do like in spirit the idea of, okay, we're not going to review every single one of these things. Let's use some common sense and figure out okay, it seems like it went off that guy. He made a move to knock it out of bounds. Let's just go with the play on the floor. I think it's great that, like, I think this is one way to remove the frivolous coach's challenge in the second quarter, which I think so many coaches think, okay, well, in the last 2 minutes, they review everything anyway, so this isn't going to come back to bite me. Now you have to be a little more strategic on when you use those, and you're not going to get a pointless review in the middle of the game. The one thing I will add is if they do approve this, if this is the way they go, do not show the replays on TV. You have to just stick with the call on the floor.
No, and Justin.
We can't have the TV network replaying it a million times and then fans are getting upset.
Look at State Media Rowan over here, man.
I don't care. Keep
TNT
it moving.
TNT is an independent quote-unquote operator. They're going to show the games they want to show the way they want to show. Don't cut in. Now you're in my professional space where I'm like, don't tell me What replays I'm allowed to show?
No. If you're going to do common sense,
I'm showing them all, baby.
And it's like high school basketball where, okay, it seemed like it went off. That's the call on the floor. Play continues. I mean, there's not going to be a real opportunity to show the replay in the same in-depth manner that they have in the past. But I don't want that micromanaged and micro-analyzed on TV if we're just going with the flow of the game. So I don't want that if this is the direction that they go. But you know what? I think it could be a positive because I think it's common sense should be prevailing in a lot of these situations. I'm just a little surprised that this is even being introduced given the push for more legalized gambling in the U.S. And I figured as that happens, we would have more and more reviews and making sure everything is done letter of the law, not spirit of the game, anything like that. I thought everything would be micro-analyzed.
That assumes Vegas actually cares about the results being fair and not about just making sure they win as much money. I mean, people forget that Vegas is best incentivized to have everyone have equal action on both sides
because
they take 10% off the top and never lose.
That's fair.
With that said, I mean, I think from an Adam Silver perspective, this is him... This is a little sterny to me. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing.
And I don't hate that.
I don't hate it either. I think everyone thinks that they want the fairest outcome. Okay. And what they don't realize is what they want is to be entertained. like there's so many little mini commissioners on Twitter, you know, where it's like, oh, this needs to be just and we need to have a balanced league. And it's like, guys, you understand that the most successful sports competition in the world is a single elimination tournament with 64 teams that is the least, you know, we would never. If we were inventing the NCAA tournament from scratch, it would be like a triple round robin into a double elimination tournament and like this crazy contraption to ensure fairness.
Could you imagine NBA Twitter making the rules for the chain gang in the NFL?
Oh my gosh. So yeah. So the point is like the idea of choosing entertainment over competitive integrity, it's not, you wouldn't think that, you know, intellectually you would ever choose entertainment, but then you kind of have to go back and remember, oh yeah, this is supposed to be fun for you know, for kids and aunts and uncles that don't really have skin in the game, and it's just supposed to be fun, and like this is a more fun outcome. So to actually answer the question, I'm fine with this. Cut reviews out because no one has fun during reviews.
Yeah, and you know what, for casual fans that aren't as invested in, they're invested in a great game, not necessarily the result in the same way that you would be if you're a fan. It's something that turns off people from the league.
And no one will walk away, by the way.
Feedback you always hear.
And no one walks away because of bad calls from the refs. No one says, I'm done watching basketball because they messed up that out of bounds call. They're grumpy. I mean, I'm a Cowboys fan. I just watched my team lose because of a bad offensive pass interference call.
Like, and also bad coaching.
No, mostly bad offensive pass interference and an intentional grounding that didn't go called. But you know, I think that like, you know, like I'm the definition of a casual football fan. I'm not likely at all to walk away from football, because I'm frustrated about a bad call. If the game became unwatchable, I'm much more likely to walk away. And I think the NBA's end of games were bordering on unwatchable.
Yeah. And the reality is, do people walk away from 6 minutes of reviews feeling happy ever? Do they feel happy with the call that was made? No,
not
everyone
often.
Feels like most of the time people are still upset. They're upset that it's either violating the spirit of the game or it's a 50-50 call that they disagree with. And there's so much of that in the NBA because it's one of the most difficult games to officiate. Like I'm fine with this.
I'm not out on review in the aggregate, but it needs to be very selectively utilized to keep, you know, the point, which is the entertainment.
Which is, which is why it's good that the coach's challenge will still be there. That should be something that is only really reserved for emergency situations. You don't have to use that every single game, but I'm here for this. I think this could be a positive addition to the league, and it's something that the more I sit with, the better I feel about it. The other thing that Shams mentioned is the discussion of an in-season tournament with $1 million per player in prize money should the team win. I don't think we really need to rehash a lot of our thoughts on an in-season tournament. We've discussed it before. I don't really see the appeal in it if that's what you're playing for. I think there needs to be something tangible that fans would actually care about if you're going to have people invest in an in-season tournament, whether that be a new draft pick that is right after the lottery. So the 15th pick is on the table and the first round is now 31 picks long. Maybe that would be something that would get people invested. I think prize money for the players is a nice thing, but I don't know how much it actually moves the needle in terms of fan interest.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that that's just, yeah, I agree with you, man. I really do. I think that they are, I feel like this commissioner group is kind of moving back in the direction that I like, you know, after a couple mm-hmm. years of choices that I didn't love. And I feel like they're starting to correct a little bit. And, you know, like that is the thing. We were really hard on Silver for a while. Yeah. And it's like, you almost forget, like, he's still pretty new to this job. This takes a minute to get good at, you know? And I still think he has the best interest. I think he just was listening to the wrong people for a minute.
I think there was too much listening to Twitter, which honestly, like, that's even something that I'm becoming more aware of. I'm trying to not have the segments on this podcast where I'm like, well, I saw this that some person with 400 followers said made this comment and I need to talk about this. No, like there's so much stuff that's said on there. Nobody's really happy on there. I'm not happy on there. No one knows what they want. Just make decisions that are in the best interest of the game and that serve the product, serve trying to make everything entertaining. And I think this out of bounds thing, this last 2 minute change could be something that's a positive step in that direction.
And by the way, I'm excited for the midseason tournament. I don't care what anyone says.
Hey, more things for the Cavs to win, baby.
Oh yeah, brother.
Things for the Cavs to win. Right as this group starts to click, they start to come together, right as we establish this young core. A little tournament we can win on a stepping stone on the route to becoming a contender once again. We are on the path, Carter. We are on the path back to being a good team. I feel very strongly about this. Whether it happens this season or in the near future, stepping stones, baby. That's the name of the game.
Here's hoping, man. Here's hoping. I'm excited to see if it's going to work or not.
Look, man, it's mid-September. This is the time for optimism. This is the time where I shine because I'm a crazy person. And hopefully our listeners are enjoying some of the insanity as well. We will be gearing up for training camp and preseason coverage. I can't wait for it. Man, preseason's just around the corner. Start of October, we're going to be seeing some games. Cannot wait. If you guys want to support the podcast, the best way to do so is by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cavs.